Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Tuesday, May 23rd, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians snapped a three-game losing streak last night, and wouldn't you know it, it was Mike Zunino with the big two-run home run in the seventh inning that sort of gave him a little breathing room with a one-run lead at that point. Hunter Gaddis just called back up to make the start in place of Peyton Battenfield. Goes six innings, gives up two hits, no runs, just an all-around outstanding outing from Gaddis, and really just the unexpected happened. It was two guys who to this point in the season hadn't really done much, and then Zunino comes through with the big hit. He's got to be feeling good about himself today.
Yeah, for sure, Joe. I mean, he broke that 0-for-27 slump in the first game of Sunday's doubleheader when he got that infield hit. They had to go to a replay to get it, but he kind of ended that. And then all of a sudden, you know, he finally runs into a home run last night, and it was a big one. Kind of stretched that lead, what, from 1-0 to 3-0, and really gave, the bullpen some elbow room to work. So that was good to see. And Hunter Gaddis, man, I mean, this is the new look Hunter Gaddis too, and a haircut. You know, he's still got the big beard, the grizzly bear beard. But
Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, but God, he looked great. I mean, he's thrown 95, 96, great off speed stuff. Just looked in command, and he did it against a team that really kind of took him to the woodshed last year.
Yeah, it was. He did. He mentioned that start back on September 15th, where the White Sox, I believe, seven runs on eight hits in four innings, and five of those hits were home runs for Chicago. He said he'd be lying if he didn't have it in the back of his mind, facing these guys that was the case and that they had done that. So felt kind of good for him to be able to go out there and pitch like that. And Tito said, his command of three pitches was, he looked sharp. The ball looked like it was crisp coming out of his hand. He had life on it. All things that, point to, he's going to get at least one more start in this rotation before you got to start making some decisions on guys like Aaron Civale and Tristan McKenzie and where they fit in the rotation. So Hunter Gaddis gets another chance to prove himself within the next week. If he can come out and repeat that kind of performance against a good Chicago lineup, you give yourself something to have to think about.
Yeah, Joe, and it's almost it's weird, like. You go from, 1 week to another, you think, all these, where is the depth, in starting pitching? What are the, maybe it's not as good as everyone says it is. And then Hunter Gaddis has a start like that. And then you're looking at, Savali and McKenzie coming back. They just put Peyton Battenfield on the injured list. Bieber throws a complete game, the first complete game of the season, in the second game Sunday. And you're thinking, well, what are they going to do with all these pitchers? It's weird. You got to ride that roller coaster. And I guess that's why, Terry Francona has to stay calm and kind of, they know what they have. But, from the outside looking in, sometimes it doesn't look as good as we've been led to believe.
And we've been led to believe that the Guardians thought in the offseason when they signed Mike Zunino to a one-year, $6 million contract that he would help improve their their power hitting numbers. He would give them a little more offense from the catching position over Austin Hedges from last year, and that his defense would be at least comparable. That has not been the case to this point in the season. The entire month of May so far, Zunino's just been underwater. He was 1 for 31 with 27 strikeouts heading into that at bat in the seventh inning. And like you said, I like the way you phrased it. He kind of ran into a home run there off of Gregory Soto. That ball, 341 feet, and it would have been a home run in just 8 ballparks in Major League Baseball, 8 out of 30. The other 22 parks, that ball would not have been out of, but it cleared the wall just out of the reach of Clint Frazier's glove. Into that little, bullpen area, the seats there, and really the shot in the arm that it gave him. But also, go back to the first inning in that game. Mike Zunino threw out Luis Robert Jr. To end the first inning, stealing second base. It was, I think, his fifth caught stealing of the season out of maybe 40 some attempt or 30 some 33 attempts, I think. And so all around he did it on both sides of the plate yesterday for Zunino. And for those people who were saying, hey, you sent Bo Naylor back down to AAA after that doubleheader, what's going on? Mike Zunino said, hey, I got something to say about that.
Yeah, that was, that's one of the best throws he's made all year, Joe. He got up out of his crouch. He was quick. It was a good, strong throw. It was on the money. There was no bounce to it. It was a good and, it made it easy Rosario, he had the nice tag. So,
well, and it had to be a good throw because Robert's one of the fastest guys in the league.
Yeah, and so it was really, his mechanics were good, and I think, that hasn't always been the case. So that was promising, and hopefully, he kind of builds on that because he's always going to be offensively, Joe. I think he's always going to be, a swing and miss guy. I mean, if you look at his stats, his track record, that's what he's done. He hits for power and he strikes out. He's not going to be a 300 hitter, but defensively, you need him to control the running game.
Yeah, that was really nice to see, and hopefully that continues again throughout the rest of the series. It at least gives you a pause to take a breath and not have to just focus everything on as the strikeouts and the offers keep piling up. The drumbeat for Bo Naylor to be back up here, doesn't get as loud. But we did talk to Chris Antonetti before the game yesterday. He did, sort of dip and dodge and duck, the sort of question, why isn't Bo Naylor here? Why isn't he ready or whatever? He says, Antonetti said, it's not a question of is he ready. It's is it the right timing and the fit with the Major League club? And I can't think of a better time than right now for Bo Naylor to be up here. But it's just obvious that they don't want to address the issue of the reason they're keeping him down there is so that they can add a year of control over him and manipulate his service time. That's the only reason right now that Bo Naylor isn't here.
Yeah, I think that's, the overriding reason. And, they did start his clock last year. So, that's one thing. But it was so late, it didn't really matter. It was only what? He only played 5 games. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't thrown real well. If you look at his numbers at Columbus, Joe, he's had some problems throwing guys out. I think he's only thrown out 14% of the runners down there. But still, eventually he's going to be here. And right now,
any problems he has throwing out runners down there, are they any worse than what Zunino and Gallagher are doing up here? That argument to me is a wash. If you're going to tell me it's because he can't handle a major league pitching staff or he doesn't know what to call it, he doesn't have the savvy or whatever, the veteran pitchers wouldn't trust him to throw to him. That's fine. Throw your backup. I like we said yesterday, Shane Bieber and Cam Gallagher are going to be catching and throwing to each other all the rest of the season. I don't think reading into Bieber's comments after his start in Chicago, there's no way he's pitching to Zunino the rest of the way out. Cam Gallagher will catch every one of Shane Beaver's starts for the remainder of the year. But you've got 2 to 3 rookies in this rotation that Bo Naylor has caught in Columbus. Have him catch those guys. He's got to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, he knows those guys, you know, and no one has ever complained about, you know, when they brought him over a couple of years ago to spring training, to big league spring training, all they did was rave about how he handled every pitcher on the staff, how he, you know, that everyone loved to throw to him. So I don't think that's an excuse.
Yeah. And so there's just take it all, lay it all bare, take it all out there. Just come out and say they can't do it because of, you know,
might open themselves up to a grievance that way with the Cubs and Chris Bryant. Well, that's what happened with them.
Right. But we could write it 1,000 times. It's exactly what's happening. So, you know, just to keep that in mind for every time somebody, you know, asks the question, why isn't Bo Naylor here? The answer is because of service time. And anything else that anybody says is just obfuscation. We'll go with that. As far as, you know, what this team needed, that win yesterday, Terry Francona said after the game, to hear the dugout's reaction to Zunino's home run made him feel good. And that's sort of an indicator there that, you know, even though they've been struggling the last couple of weeks, they've lost however many games in their last 10 or whatever. The fact that they haven't quit on each other is a positive sign and a good thing for Francona. And, you know, as long as you've got the right attitude and the right, you know, guys pulling in the right direction, I think this thing could turn around in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point, Joe. You know, that dugout they showed, you know, I was watching a game on TV last night, and that dugout exploded when he hit that home run. And, you know, they're pulling for him. You know, everybody knows, everybody in that locker room has probably been through a slump like that. And they know what it does to you, you know, and how you the harder you work, sometimes the worse it gets. And so I think, you know, that was a good sign that people, you know, that they're all on the same end of the rope, pulling on the same end of the rope. And you wouldn't expect anything less.
We saw in the clubhouse prior to the game yesterday, Tristan McKenzie, he threw a bullpen yesterday in Cleveland. Cody Morris scheduled to throw a bullpen either today or tomorrow, and then possibly head out on a rehab assignment with Columbus or Akron. Aaron Civale pitching tonight in Columbus. I think McKenzie's scheduled for Thursday night in Columbus. So, you know, those guys and their injury rehab they're on their way. McKenzie looks, you know, he brings that energy that they really need if they're going to kick this into high gear. He's, you know, lights up that clubhouse, and it was good to see him back. You know, he looks like he's healthy, and he's getting ready. So that will be another shot in the arm, another boost for the pitching staff.
Joe, what are they going to do with when McKenzie and Savali come back, and if Gattis keeps pitching well? What, you know, this is going to be really an interesting situation, because, you know, you've got a couple veterans that you're going to stand by, but what about the three other spots in the rotation? How do you think it's going to shake out?
Is a 6-man rotation completely out of the question, or, you know, could you move Bieber around in that rotation to keep him on 5 days to? Because we know he likes his routine and his regular rotation. Could you make the rookies move around a little bit and sort of manipulate their innings so that by the end of the year they're not all piled up too?
You could, but, you know, they've always shied away from that 6-man rotation, even when everybody was healthy and, you know, they were pitching well. And, you know, I think, you know, if they had ran into a, you know, a long stretch where they were playing consecutive games, like 20, 22 games in a row, they might, you know, throw in a spot start there. But, you know, in the past, they've shied away from that. And I know teams are going to more and more to a 6-man rotation, but, you know, I don't see them doing it, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, I don't think it's a stubbornness or anything like that. I think it's that they feel, you know, just reading the guys that they have, that they're more comfortable with those guys in a 5-day rotation as opposed to, you know, 6-man. So I don't know. I don't think I've seen a lot of proposals out there on Twitter, you know, thrown around by guys maybe thinking, you know, hey, it saves these guys some innings, saves the young guys like Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen some wear and tear if they go to a six-man rotation. But I just don't see it happening. You know, it's just not in their character, their nature, that if they have to make a hard decision like sending one of Allen or Bibee down for a little while to keep him, you know, fresh and keep him throwing, that's a possibility too. We talked, you know, you and I talked before we started recording here. Gattis certainly earned himself at least one more look in the rotation before either Savali or McKenzie is ready to come back. So, you know, if he can repeat that, and it's not the first time this season he did it. He did it back in Oakland, went six innings and gave up one hit. Granted, that was against Oakland, but you know, he earned himself at least the right to go back out there and pitch one more start and you know, prove himself. Yeah, you have to make hard decisions. It's going to be, you know, how long will Aaron Civale get a, you know, how long of a leash will he have when he comes back? Are you going to let him stumble after, you know, not pitching for a month and a half at the major league level? Are you going to let him get his feet under him a few starts before you make a decision if he's going to be part of this rotation for the remainder of the season?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think Savali, to me, if he stays healthy, you know, I think he's got a spot. You know, I think he keeps his spot. He's got to stay healthy, Joe, though, and he's got to get into the fifth and sixth inning. And you know, I think he'll be able to do that. But you know, you know, they kind of lean on that experience. But you know, and they've carried, you know, what, three rookies for in the rotation for a while now. So, but I think Savali, you know, health is the big thing to me with Savali. He has got to be able to, you know, post every 5 days.
And don't forget, you've still got Zach Plesac down in
Yeah,
AAA.
I
He's been
forgot about
pitching.
Plesac.
Everybody forgot about Plesac. And you've got Gavin Williams down in AAA right now. And all he's done down there has been lights out pretty much every time he pitches. Gavin Williams, I think, under different circumstances, would be on the fast track to be here by sometime in June, possibly next, you know, this season, if things were different and then there was a need for it. But like you said, it's crowded right now, and you're sending Cody Morris out on a rehab assignment. Where are you going to put him? Are you going to put
Yeah,
him in the
now,
bullpen? We
yeah,
asked.
is he a reliever or a starter?
Well,
That's another great question.
we asked Chris Antonetti that question, and they said they still haven't determined it. Right now, it's a little early in Morris's you know, rehab to see whether or not he's going to be able to handle getting stretched back out, or if he's going to go into the bullpen and try to work there. I think he could be effective for them in a relief role, at least, you know, for this season, and then you readdress that next year if you have to, coming into spring training, whether he's going to be a starter or a reliever for you. All right, we have to talk about it, Hoynesy. We have to talk about the bird. It's all everybody's talking about. I saved it to the end of this because, you know, I didn't want to lead with the doom and gloom, but there is just something about Major League Baseball and killing birds that it's happened. If it's happened more than twice, it's an epidemic. And you know, you go back to Randy Johnson, obviously the most famous bird kill of all time in a spring training game in 2001. He just obliterated one that had the misfortune of flying between his fastball and home plate in a game. And that's the one that sort of really sticks out because of just the obscene nature of it, with the feathers flying everywhere and the plume and all that. Last night, this was a bird that was pretty much already on its last legs, if you will, hovering around the area between shortstop and the pitcher's mound. It looked like it had been injured or wasn't able to fly. It was just sort of hopping around. And Will Brennan smacks a 101, 100.1 mile an hour line drive that found this bird. And if Randy Johnson's was the most infamous, then Will Brennan's was clearly the most gruesome, because this thing got flattened like a pancake. It exploded this bird. And I know for a fact that there is video out there that is not being shown and not being released because it would not be a good look. But this bird took the business end of a line drive from Will Brennan. Brennan issued an apology to PETA. I think it was
I saw that.
more of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, half-hearted approach. But Hoynesy, you've actually seen birds get hit in person. You covered a game in 2009 with Shinsu Chu.
Yeah, Shinsu Chu hit a line drive. That's when all those seagulls, Joe, were kind of congregating in center field. They kept coming back game after game to Progressive Field, and Shinsu Chu hit one up the middle, hit the seagull, knocked a feather off it, and Coco Crisp was playing for Kansas City, came charging in from center field, and because the ball hit the bird, it took a right turn, and Coco couldn't field the ball. I think that was a winning run.
It
If I
was the
can.
10th, it was the bottom of the 10th inning, and Mark DeRosa was on second base, and DeRosa came around and scored walk-off win for Cleveland. Do you remember, did anybody say anything after that, after the game? Did obviously Chu wasn't going to say much. I don't think he was big for making jokes, but did anybody have anything to say about that that you recall?
I can't remember. I cannot remember, but I know the bird was okay. He lost a feather and flew away.
Oh, you guys interviewed the bird after the game. That's what happened. There you go.
You know that happened. That with Dave Winfield, when I think he was playing for the Yankees, he was in Canada and he's playing threw a ball in from the outfield and hit a seagull. Now the seagull is a protected bird there, so he almost got arrested. That if
He
you kill a seagull.
actually did get arrested, but the charges were later dropped. They interviewed Winfield, like they took him into an office and they deposed him at the it was at Exhibition Stadium. Yeah, you don't mess with the wildlife in Canada. That's that's one
No.
thing that you don't go anywhere near that. But yeah, think about it. Dave Winfield almost got arrested or did get arrested, almost got charged with a crime for hitting a bird. But this isn't even the most, like Brennan hitting this bird last night. Zach Gallen from Arizona was warming up in the outfield in Oakland less than a week ago, and he threw a pitch and it killed a bird that way. Like you've got it, they have it on video. They showed the video. I saw it on Twitter. It's uncanny. These major league players hitting and killing birds. It's just not, they're not doing it on purpose. Obviously, nobody kills a bird on purpose with a baseball. But how many times can it happen? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the birds are, birds and pigeons are attracted to the ballpark. There's easy access to food, and they're hanging around there. And some of them, I don't know if they're not real healthy, or like you were saying, Joe, this last night's bird was kind of on his last legs to begin with. So it's too bad, but
I mean, they sent a guy from the grounds crew out there with a shovel, and he scooped up the bird. It was flat as a pancake and just exploded from the inside. The pictures are pretty gruesome. But the guy going out there with the shovel to clean it up almost felt like a cutaway from The Simpsons. That kind of tongue-in-cheek humor was the vibe that I got when I saw the guy go out there and scoop this bird up. So God bless you, Tweety. We don't need to see you at the park anymore. They got to start blowing off the fireworks again to spook the birds out of the park. Maybe that'll work and get them going. They used to blow off the fireworks like a home run
Right.
in between innings to try and get the birds to scatter. So I don't know. We'll keep track of this because it's a very popular story right now that Will Brennan flattened a bird with a line drive. Brennan did not want to talk after the game. He got out of there before we could get to him, but he had a big smile on his face as he was leaving the clubhouse with the no comment. So again, at least a moment of levity with this team that's been struggling over the last few games, and they finally get a win. And we'll see if they can go out and repeat what they did last Thursday in Chicago when Logan Allen and Dylan Cease match up tonight.
Yeah, this is a step in the right direction, and hopefully they can build off it, Joe, because this team could use a few wins in a row. They've been going back and forth. They really haven't hit their stride yet, and they still need to get that offense going. But it was good to see Zunino swing the bat, and it was even better to see that bullpen come out there and really keep the ball in the park and put some zeros on the board.
All right, we'll be back with another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast on Thursday, because Wednesday is an afternoon game. Hoynsie, we will talk to you then.
All right, Joe.